On this episode of Inside Boxing Live, we are back in our studios here in New York City, and we are ready to talk more fallout from Gervonta Davis's win over Ryan Garcia. You've heard some of the stories about moles. You've heard some stories about who was at the post-fight press conference, who wasn't, Ryan's performance, Tank's big win, who he should fight next. And we also have some other news in boxing. Believe it or not, there are other fights happening. Let's get into it. Let's talk boxing. What is up, everybody? Welcome in to another episode of Inside Boxing Live. This is a product of John Boy Media. I am Dan Canobio. I'm just one half of the show. My other half, my better half, Chris Algieri, former 140-pound world champ, looking sharp, looking refreshed. We are back from Vegas. It chewed us up and spit us out. It was a very successful work trip for us. It was a very successful fight night for Tank Davis. How does it feel to be back in sunny Florida, Chris?
Feels good, especially after I got a couple days of 10 plus hours of sleep because taking a red eye home in the middle of the night was tough.
Chris dipped after the fight. He looked at his JetBlue app and was like, yo, I can get on this midnight flight. And then he was gone. Poof, gone. Left me in drain the dust.
My favorite flight out of Vegas. Saturday nights in Vegas, nothing good happens. So I want to get out clean. I got out clean, but I was very tired the last couple days.
You know what you missed? Me and Dre walked around the MGM Grand for like the millionth time of the weekend. Allen Iverson, former NBA great.
Nice.
On the craps table. Multiple craps tables. I don't know. I've never seen this before. He had three tables like to himself with like stacks of chips. And he's spreading them out everywhere. We watched him for a solid 20 minutes. So that was the highlight of the post. That's all you miss, really, after the fight. Didn't get into any parties. Didn't get into any mischief. Too tired. Because we're bringing you all sorts of crazy content. I appreciate everyone following along. Our social media is blowing up right now. Inside Boxing Live. Oh, John Boy Boxing on Instagram. Our TikTok. We're TikTok people now. Can you believe that, Chris?
I'm astonished myself. I never expected myself to be a TikTok influencer.
Dude, our TikTok.
Here we are.
Inside Boxing Live TikTok. Go follow us if you're not already. Like several millions of views for our takes, for Ryan Garcia videos. It was that type of fight. You know, it was that type of fight. We're going to start seeing a lot about this fight in terms of the business side now. Pay-per-views are going to start rolling in. We're going to hear about that. I'm hearing something like over a million pay-per-views for this fight. Would not be shocked by that. I know it did one of the biggest gates in the history of T-Mobile or Vegas to not have to do with Mayweather or a McGregor. And that's true. Like, we were there all weekend. It felt big. A lot of celebrities, a lot of athletes. It felt new. It felt fresh. So that's that. I did go back and rewatch the fight. And I know we did our post-fight podcast, which you do a post-fight pod, but we're very emotional. Like we had literally just watched the fight like 10 minutes before we recorded.
I went back. You still weren't sweating from running over to get into the media room.
Right, a lot goes into it, but I went back and rewatched it. I know we were giving Ryan Garcia some respect as he should get. You know, it's nuanced, but he really didn't fight that great of a fight on second watch. Yes, he had Tank. I wouldn't say hurt, but he had him on his back foot. He had moments in that second round. I thought he won the first round. I thought he came out firing that jab. And then he just deviated from the game plan. By his own admission, Chris, he said, I got bored in there. Like, what? You got bored in the biggest fight of your life? What is that about?
I watched it again, too. I mean, even that night, I had given him the first round, only the first round. The second round, he won, but he got dropped. So that was an even round in my eyes. I do believe he had Tank at least buzzed in that round. And, you know, he was fighting. I'll give him that, like, throughout. And I said that, you know, the night of the fight, I'm like, I'll tip my hat to him. He was outclassed entirely the entire time. He's not on the same level as Tank in terms of his technical skill, his fundamentals, none of it. And, you know, he was in there fighting. That's pretty much it. So I can tip my hat to that, but because he was completely outgunned. But other than that, it was all Tank Davis.
He was definitely fighting. He was definitely in the ring. Definitely had a good first round behind that stiff jab. That seemed to be the game plan from Goosen. Was to establish that range and fire hard jabs and then throw right hooks off of it and eventually throw that left. Did that in the first round. started to do it a little bit in the second, and that's when he came in with this line that he said he got bored. And what happened the minute he got away from the game plan? He was dropped on his ass. I mean, it's insane. Gervonta Davis didn't throw or land a power shot in this fight until 5 minutes in. And the first power shot Davis threw sent Garcia to the canvas. That's how surgical Davis is, and that's how if you get off your game plan for 1 second, he makes you pay. But I'll say this. I don't like that Ryan deviated from the game plan that Joe Goosen set in place, and I'm hearing some things that happened afterwards in the locker room that are just wild. I don't like some of the things that Garcia said after the fight. I got bored. I started to go for a knockout. Didn't like that at all. I
don't believe the board thing. I believe going for the knockout. I do think he got excited and got clipped, but
right, it's verbiage. He says he got bored, yeah. But in reality, he deviated from the game plan.
And, you know, he lost discipline.
Lost discipline. Perfect.
It's discipline.
I absolutely hate opening up social media and seeing people clowning him. Dude, what are we doing here? We beg for these guys to take these fights. We want to see these young guys fight, right? Ryan Garcia did everything he could do to make this fight happen. All the stipulations, we've heard them all. And he's still going to get clowned? Like, what's going to motivate these fighters? They are human and they are sensitive, believe me, they are. What's going to, like, if they open up social media and they see, oh, he's a bum, this, that, and the other, he quit. Like, what is going to motivate them to fight the best? Because it's, you're supposed to take that challenge, you're supposed to get respect for getting in the ring. And then you open up that and you see those people on there. I mean, it's almost like I see more negative against to him than positive.
Yeah, that's a great point, Dan. And that's, I didn't even think of that actually. It's like, what's going to motivate these younger guys where they do actually, I mean, all of us care, but like, listen, I've been on both sides. I've been praised in losses and I've been poo-pooed on wins. I mean, I get it. I've been on both sides. I've been called a bum. I called everything you can under the sun. I think I'm a little bit of a different era than these guys. I don't care as much, you know, when with the negative comments. I'm not a comment reader. It doesn't really, never really affected me all that much. You feel it. It's a twinge, but I don't know. I think these guys, especially a guy like Ryan, who's most of his following is from social media, and he built his platform on that. It's going to be a really hard pill to swallow. And yeah, it's true. What's going to motivate these young guys to step out of the box? Because Ryan did a lot of work to make this fight happen, made a lot of concessions going in. We interviewed De La Hoya, you know, the week of the fight, and he was saying, he's like, listen, Ryan wanted this fight so bad it made me hard for me to negotiate properly, because he was just like, yeah, to everything. And I know what that's like. I've been that guy. I've been the fighter, like, I'll fight him, whatever, let's go. And then it's just like, whoa, easy, like, we're trying to get you more this, more that.
Yeah,
but if you're so, you know, you're so headstrong about making a fight happen, you don't care about everything, it can hurt you. AKA our example is Marvin Hagler versus Sugar Ray Leonard. Yep. He made a lot of concessions in that fight to make it happen. And it bit him in the ass on the way out.
You want to talk about this whole drama that happened afterwards? Oscar not showing up to the presser, B-Hop.
Yeah.
Oscar puts out a video, says that I had death threats after the fight. So I have my security team told me to get out of there. PBC, I talked to someone at PBC. That's simply not true because he was at the weigh-in and there was out in the open with people there. B-Hop was also not at the post-fight presser on that stage. Oscar claims that PBC banned them. I heard from someone from PBC. They said that that's simply not true either. I mean, there's just so much going on with Garcia and his camp. Like, there's a lot of friction. There's a lot of cooks in the kitchen. And you kind of saw that on fight night. It's like, I feel like he didn't know who to listen to. It was like his dad plays a big role in his life. Joe Goosen is now the new trainer. Are they listening to him? Oscar and B-Hop. You know, B-Hop touching Davis. I thought that was kind of silly. You know, Oscar obviously has all his antics. We're big fans of him, but you can't deny that he is a promoter and he does some interesting things out there. I just feel like there's a lot swirling around Garcia for the biggest fight of his life, and we kind of saw that he was not even close on the same level physically, and it seems like mentally he was off too.
He was definitely unprepared for this fight, and that was obvious. And this is, again, I'm tipping my hat to looking at the positive side. Is, you know, the kid went out swinging. he didn't, I mean, I know people are saying a lot about him, whatever, in terms of, like you said, they're clowning him, but I don't know, man, he was unprepared for this fight. The layoff was a big problem for me. All the things that we spoke about on the show leading up, mm-hmm. I think was a massive issue. And you could tell physically he wasn't prepared for the 12 rounds. Mentally, he wasn't prepared for the drama and everything surrounding it. His team wasn't ready. And listen, I've been there in these big fights, and having a team that's a unit is so important. And the person who needs to be the boss is the fighter.
Yep.
You need to be able to be in control of who's around you. And it just doesn't seem like Ryan has taken the helm of the ship that is the Ryan Garcia, you know,
brand.
Destroyer of a brand. Exactly. It's like it's too many cooks in the kitchen. Like you said, it's no good. It just, it seemed that way. He was very scattered, which, you know, is going to play into the lack of discipline as the fight wore on and as things got heated up. And not even heated up, literally in the second round, he lost discipline. But
he had moments later on in the fight. Go ahead.
Yeah, at moments, but like
nothing
not discipline moments. It was It was talent moments. It's just because he is that talented, and he's fast and he's strong and he's tough.
Yeah.
We see him get up like nothing. He that first shot, you know, you mentioned that was the first power shot that Davis landed. That was a killer shot.
It was
awesome. Like he rolled and landed. It was clean. Ryan didn't see it. Very hard shot. Cracked the nose of Ryan right away. He got up with a bloody nose immediately. Got hit hard, went down. Mm-hmm. But Ryan, he gets right up and was coming forward. So I'll give him that.
Yeah, I mean, that shot could have knocked.
Strategically on his style was not smart.
That shot would have stopped a lot of guys. And we've seen Ryan down twice, right? It was Luke Campbell, and he got back up, and he won the fight. Like, I was shocked how he got up, and he got up quick, too. And he was able to fight on, obviously not the same extent. I feel like that second round knockdown was the end of the fight for him because he stopped throwing with conviction until about the sixth round.
Well, he certainly stopped jabbing with conviction.
Yes.
And the left hooks, live by the sword, die by the sword. The left hook was the problem. He didn't land really any left hooks all night. It was the right hook, which came out of nowhere, which seemed to stun Gervonta in the second round. And that was the punch that was actually having effect later on. Gervonta was so prepared for the left
took
hook.
It away from him.
He was waiting for that thing. He's like, hey, throw it. I have the counter to it. I'm going to roll it, and you're open, because that's the way you are. He's always open. He throws the left hook, and he's got his arm out here. He's got his chin way up in the air.
Boom.
And Gervonta was just waiting for that shot. Live by the sword, die by the sword. And Gervonta, for Ryan, that is that left hook.
Davis is so good, man. He's now clearly the guy. We'll get to him, too. I know we're opening with a lot of Garcia, but that's a big part of the storylines. Quickly, this spy stuff. If you've been around
you
boxing,
have all the info. I'm hearing this stuff.
I did a whole video on it,
and then you have all the info. This is why we're perfect.
I did a whole video on it, like examining it, and like everyone here at the office was so locked into this fight, not boxing fans, so locked into the spy storyline because it's very juicy. Like I said in the video I made, but like you've heard of this happen before. Like it's a small community, especially with the sparring, and you mix in the fact like Tom Brown was the lead promoter of this fight, and he works with Gervonta. His brother-in-law is Joe Goosen. Like, that just shows you how close a lot of these fighters and like these communities are. Like, things were shared. I'm not saying that was shared between Joe and Tom Brown, but like, apparently Ryan Garcia got hit to the body in camp in sparring, got hurt by a Mongolian fighter with a very hard name to pronounce. And he was not 100% heading into the fight. and he just so happened to lose from a body shot. Is that why he lost the fight? No, he didn't lose the fight because of the spy. But, like, there definitely was. Like, Garcia confirmed it. But can you touch on, like, chatter that goes on in sparring?
Yeah, I mean, it happens. It happens at all levels. I remember vividly, and a lot of it goes with betting. Because a lot of those spies are really for that. They're for the betting odds. Because that happened to me when I was fighting Rustam Pravonikov. I think when I opened, I was like 15 or 16 to 1. And then as we got closer, the odds just got closer and closer because people were coming to watch me spar in camp. And they sparring partners were talking about how good I was, how good I was looking, how many guys I was lumping up in the gyms. And also Rustam was the opposite. He was having a lot of trouble training against taller, longer guys who were boxing. So it was back and forth. I mean, it's not so much it was spies, but it was no secret about what was happening in the gyms. And that gets out. And that's a lot of times why the betting lines in Vegas are different than what you might suspect. Because there's moles on both sides who are listening and figuring out. And listen, sparring partners, man, a little extra money. A lot of times they'll divulge. Why not? I mean, life of a sparring partner is tough.
Right. Any money you can get.
To spar the man and you're getting paid, you know, and you're not getting paid a ton. So. Yeah, it's one of those things, man. It's this is the art of war. It's not just X's and O's.
Can we squash the fact that like he lost the fight because of the spy? Because that's the problem with this fight of this magnitude. There were so many new eyeballs on the sport, which I think is great. Like people that have never usually watched boxing tuned into this fight, And it was like a perfect storm because we see that delayed reaction knockdown, and that's just going to be like, oh, he took, you know, he just ate the punch, or it was you know, like the rigged or whatever. Like there was plenty of that because there was all these new eyeballs on the sport.
Yeah, but new eyeballs have no idea how body shots
work. Right. No one knows how body shots work when it comes to that. But that's like one problem with the fight of this magnitude. But it's just had a lot of things going in there. But let's squash the fact that like the spy had nothing to do with like Geronta throwing that punch at that time. Like that was always part of his game plan. It was like, I'm going to hammer to the body. He's one of the best body punchers in the sport.
If you listen to our show, then you're not surprised at how this fight went in terms of styles and what happened. Like you talk about time, how aggressive Ryan is or has become as of late. He wasn't always that way. I think he was at his best when he was actually boxing off his back foot and countering guys with his speed and his ability to pull the trigger. As of late, he's walking guys down and being super aggressive, which is exactly what he did against Tank. He had some success then because Tank starts so slow. And this was a prototypical, very typical Tank Davis fight. That was the archetype of how he always fights. He starts super slow. He analyzes. He actually started quicker this time, I think, because he had to. But he works the body. He works his way in on taller guys. He's a good counter. He's a great counter puncher. He doesn't throw a lot of punches, but he's extremely precise. And he's got power in both hands.
Crazy.
And he showed that. And, you know, Ryan's not good at exchanging. That's why I don't like him being so aggressive. He's a good counterpuncher. He uses that speed. In exchanges, there's just way too many gaps and holes in his fundamentals when he throws, which we saw both times. He got hit while throwing on both knockdowns. Got hit while throwing with the right left hand upstairs that dropped him. Again, like you said, man, his ability to get up that fast was very impressive. Body shots are different. He got hit. If you watch that again, he got hit while throwing. Ryan's one of those guys, similar to Amir Khan. They're so fast. They're so offensive-minded. If you look at that, Ryan's actually throwing with both hands at the same time. He's throwing bang, bang. Yeah. Like it's both hands have left the defensive posture looking for offense, and he gets cracked with a shot. Didn't see in the middle of a punch, which always hurts the most. And the way liver shots work, delayed reaction is a very real thing. I mean, it's literally you're striking an organ. It affects your nervous system. It's not like a normal punch. It's not like getting a Windex out of you. It's not like falling on your back and being, ugh, like we were when you're a little kid. Very, very different when you crack in the liver.
Yeah, good point. I'm shocked by some of the people that are coming out and saying that he quit. Chavez,
I think
Senior?
A lot of that comes from people just not really liking Ryan.
Right?
I think a lot of, yeah, it seems like there's a lot of extra venom on what some of these boxing people are coming out with. I think people are a little upset with him because his ability to jump the line because of his social media platform, some of the things he's been saying leading up to the fight, some of the things he said after the fight. It's not everybody likes a pretty boy, so I think there's a lot of extra venom attached to Ryan Garcia that maybe really isn't warranted.
Right, the new school or the old school boxing guard is perplexed by some of the things we saw this weekend. No belts on the line, social media followings, all that and the other. To put a button on the Ryan Garcia talk before we move over to Tank, he says he's moving to 140 now. Probably won't see him for several months. Probably going to see him in there with a soft touch, like a Mercedo Hesta type, like a Fortuna type. I went over to the Golden Boy.
That's not that soft.
But you know what I mean. Like,
yeah.
Someone that is going to stand in front of him, someone where he can get some confidence. Went over to the Golden Boy website to look at the roster. Not many 140-pounders on their roster. They have Jojo Diaz, who has lost several fights in a row. He's pretty much a lightweight. I don't think he'll fight him. They'll find someone for him to get in there with, but this is a big-time fighter. I mean, this is a guy that is part of a pay-per-view that's going to do close to 1 million buys. Like, would you favor him over any of the top 140-pounders right now? Like, I'll go through a list right now, and you tell me if you would favor Ryan Garcia over them. Josh Taylor?
No.
Teofimo?
I like that fight, but not for a little bit.
Subriel Matias?
No.
Regis Progre? Here's an interesting one. Jose Ramirez.
Right now, no.
Close. I think it would be a very close odds. Jack Catterall.
I still favor Ramirez.
Jack Catterall.
That fight could make sense, yep.
Gary Antoine Russell.
I don't know enough about him yet, honestly. I haven't seen
hits
him.
Hard.
He hits real hard. He's good. I mean, that post-off fight was impressive.
I think he has 100% knockout rate.
Yeah. I don't know. That's a question mark.
Barboza.
I like that one.
He doesn't hit hard and kind of We'll stand and trade.
He's there.
Big.
He throws a lot of punches too. So there's going to be openings for Ryan's counters. The thing about Ryan is he needs to go back to the drawing board. He needs to work on his fundamentals a lot.
Yeah.
So
does he have time to do that?
If he doesn't make those changes, he's not beating any of these guys, let alone, these top guys.
How about this, Chris? Rolly Romero versus Ryan Garcia.
Great fight.
Think of the buildup for that.
Great fight, and I think Ryan can win.
The buildup would be hilarious.
I like a fight with Chon Zepeda, too.
Chon Zepeda, yeah. I mean, he's got to get back in the win column. Didn't he fight again since his last loss?
Yeah.
He's pretty active. He's always going to be fighting. I'm sure they'll find someone for him to fight in his next fight. But after that, you got to go for some of these big guys at 140. And, I mean, I just ran through, the top eight or nine. Rolly's fighting.
The crazy thing is Rolly's probably going to be a world champion by the time Ryan's ready to fight him. So,
that's very true. He's no longer fighting Albert Puelo. He popped PEDs. I think he's fighting, who is it? Israel Barroso? I just butchered his name.
Who is older than me, I think.
That's old.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Puelo was going to beat Rolly. I mean, he's slick enough. He's tall. He's long.
Yeah.
And Rolly is one of those guys. I was watching his fight with Tank, and yeah, he did well. He was very physical. He is very physical, but in terms of his body type, I don't see him packing on any more muscle to go to 140. He looked about as strong as he's going to get at 35. I mean, he's filled in. He didn't look thin at 35. So I don't know how 40 is really going to suit him.
Yeah. Ryan Rolly fight, I think, would do numbers. I think it would be it would do great on social media and inside the ring. Two powerful guys, two guys that come forward, not the most technical guys. That could be kind of fun. It's probably down the line. Obviously, Rolly's with PBC. It's another mess. Who knows how many bridges were burned this weekend between Golden Boy and PBC over the course of a long negotiation, and then a fight weekend where we saw a lot of fisticuffs. We didn't see fisticuffs, but we saw Bernard Hopkins place his hand on Tank Davis. And did you hear this rumor? Apparently,
so
there
a lot
was
of extracurriculars, we'll call them.
Dude, did you hear this? So during that weigh-in, there was a scuffle, and Hopkins puts his hand on the back of Tank. And then I hear rumors that he was putting HGH or PED cream on Davis, which is the most ridiculous rumor ever, because what would that do? That would cancel the fight. Bernard doesn't get his piece of the pie.
Well, no, it wouldn't. It would come up after. So the fight would already have happened. It would be
good point.
You would fail the post-fight.
That's why you're here. And they could smear. But that just didn't happen. That's what I'm talking about.
No, I can never see Bernard doing that.
But Bernard wild. Going after Tyson. I saw that today. He said, ain't no one scared of Mike Tyson. That's Bernard Hopkins said. I just didn't like I like Hopkins a lot. I just didn't like him inserting himself so much into this. Your time is done, Tank said. You're a legend, but don't insert yourself into the middle of this.
Yeah, it was weird that he was even on that side of the dais in order to even touch Tank or to get involved.
Right.
I'm not sure. Listen, every one of us knew that there was going to be some form of shoving match at that weigh-in. We knew that we were going to the weigh-in for
so
that.
Maybe couldn't bet on that.
There. No, of course. that was definitely happened. So I don't know why Bernard would put himself in harm's way, because you never know with those huge security guards on either side, and they're going to jump in immediately. Nothing's going to get done between the fighters. Nobody gets hurt there. It's when the melee happens in between to separate everybody that people get hurt, and that's not a good place for Bernard or anyone to be. It was just strange that he was on that side.
Yeah.
Not a great look or a great move from the Hall of Famer. But listen, man,
testosterone.
Sometimes you're used to being the big show. So
yep. Well, my point being is there was obviously they made the fight, but I feel like there was some damage to be done, whether it was Oscar claiming there was death threats or claiming that Hopkins was banned from the post fight, and who knows if we'll ever see these crossover fights that we want to see. Another point being is all those 140 pounders that I named, none of them are with Golden Boy. A couple are with Matchroom, and I guess there's some synergy between Matchroom, Golden Boy, and DAZN all fighting on the same thing. Oh, speaking of DAZN, did you see this? DAZN had a major issue on fight night. They got flooded because a lot of people were ordering the pay-per-view through DAZN because it was $20 cheaper if you had a subscription. And right. People were getting charged 6-7 times and not able to see the fight.
Oh, boy.
That's bad.
That's real bad. And listen, and on the tail of them upping the price.
Yeah.
And then all these technical issues, bad look.
And then
bad look.
And next week, 2 weeks, is Canelo on pay-per-view, which a lot of fans aren't happy that it's on pay-per-view. That's not good. They got to make good on that. These fight fans pay their hard-earned money. You know, they fork over that money. They're taken advantage of a lot to begin with. And then on Fight Night, you can't even see the biggest fight of the year, and you get charged 6-7 times. Like, some guy posted his receipt. It was like $99, $99, $99 all down the line. Crazy. Looked like my bank account when I was in Vegas. My statement. But they expense them here at Jumbo. We did give away one pay-per-view.
You mean your ATM bill?
Yeah, that's what it looked like.
Withdrawal.
We did give away one pay-per-view, one free pay-per-view to Rachel H. She sent us a screenshot, so I hope she enjoyed the fight night. We certainly did. So let's get over to Tank. He's the man now. He is the man. The face of boxing is now being tossed around. Where do you stand on this? I'm a more of a faces of boxing guy. So who's on your faces of boxing? Because I think Tank is definitely one of them.
Like my Mount Rushmore of the current guys. I mean, I'm going with Canelo. Okay. Of course, he's the money train. So you gotta have. We always have one. You know, he's like the golden boy. That was like the Sugar Ray Leonard, the Oscar De La Hoya, the Floyd Mayweather, now the Canelo. And we're coming to the close of the Canelo era, and we're waiting for who the next guy is going to be. Tank is knocking on that door, though, baby.
Woo! Is he on your Mount Rushmore?
High on him fight night. Has to be.
Yeah.
Has to be. Off of something like this. I mean, in terms of the popularity, undefeated, it's such a high knockout percentage. He's got to be up there. And the draw, I mean, the between ticket sales, pay-per-view numbers. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, listen, to be the face of boxing, you've got to have money. You know, like, it doesn't matter if you could beat everybody. It's like Bubu Andrade at one time probably could beat everybody in the world, but there was no money there. So you're not going to have him as the face of boxing. It's not possible.
So who are your other two?
Tank. What's that?
Who are your other two?
Where are we at?
Right now you got Canelo and Tank, which I agree with. That's on mine.
Canelo and Tank. I'm trying to think who the other big money draws are. I mean, Triple G would have been there a couple of years ago. Definitely not anymore.
Tyson Fury?
Absolutely. Yeah, heavyweights are different. Yeah, probably Tyson Fury. And I mean, again, it was 6 months ago. It would have been Anthony Joshua, but
see, the fourth for me, like, so far, our three are in line. I have Canelo, Tank belongs on it. Until Canelo falls off a complete cliff, we're about to see him fill a full stadium in Mexico. He's the guy, regardless of loss to a Bivol. He's earned that spot for sure. Tank is 100% on that on this list of faces of boxing. Tyson Fury is probably. The best heavyweight, he is the best heavyweight in the world, whether you like his antics or not. He sells tickets, and he's a very recognizable face. The fourth one, I think, is really tough. There's a lot of guys, Anthony Joshua sells a lot of tickets. There's the Devin Haney's of the world, Spence Crawford, but they just don't fight enough. 160 is a barren wasteland. 175, Bivol and Beterbiev aren't exactly marketable, even though they're really good. So I think the fourth is Naoya Inoue. This is, you have to have some representation over in, that's the Pacific. He's huge in Japan. You got to think outside of just the U.S. is a global sport. He sells out arenas there. He is a god amongst men in Japan. I think the fourth guy right now is very debatable, but I think it's Inoue.
I'm not sure about the numbers of him, but that came to my thought too, because he is. For one, he is that good, and two, I mean, if he draws the numbers out there the way that you're alluding to, then yeah. But I'm just not sure about the numbers in terms of that. But otherwise, I mean, I still might have Anthony Joshua.
Yeah,
he's just that dude, man. And I think he is just a money making machine. Everyone around him makes money when he fights, and that's part of what being the face of boxing is. This is entertainment. This is a money making sport. So yeah, I think you and I our top three are definitely it. But that fourth one.
Tough. Could be Joshua. Could be Inoue.
I don't know if I can have a little guy being over a big guy.
Well, how about this? Like, a lot of these guys that we saw this weekend, I ran into Errol Spence, and he assured me that the fight was happening with Crawford. No big deal. It's breaking news in the lobby of the MGM. But like I think a lot of these guys, like Spence Crawford, like Charlo was in attendance. Haney is obviously very hungry for big fights. Teofimo, like, they probably saw this event and was like, I want that attention. Like, I want some of that.
Oh, yeah.
So let me get on the face of boxing list. Let me find my biggest contemporary out there, biggest opponent. And I want to fight in these big fights in Vegas with my face everywhere and the whole world transfixed on the fight.
Well, this fight showed you that you need a dance partner, right? Because neither one of these guys gets this attention without fighting each other. And you mentioned three names, Crawford, Spence, Haney. Any one of those guys can be on the Mount Rushmore of boxing right now as the face of boxing with a big fight. I mean, obviously we've got Spence and Crawford. They fight each other. The winner of that, right on that, he's on there. Could be number one. Then Haney beats Loma, and then he beats Tank right there.
Yep.
I think it's going to take more than beating Loma to be a crossover star, but he beats Tank.
He's on his way.
Takes his spot. Definitely he's on his way already, but if he beats Loma, because Loma, I think, has a lot of eyes from the outside sport, but I think a lot of people also are looking at him like he's a little long in the tooth and hasn't been that active recently. But you beat Loma, that definitely gets people perked. Now you beat Tank, who we do both have on that face of boxing discussion. Boom, you're now there. So yeah, that's the thing, man. It's boxing. It's what have you done for me lately? Everyone's one fight away from being, you know, the man or a bum. Unfortunately,
it's crazy, man.
That's what people say.
It's such a week to week sport. Yeah, I follow it like crazy, and I'm still like, once this fight's over, I'm forgetting about it. But this one got some staying power. This Tank Ryan fight. There's so much ramifications, and it got me thinking about the next mega fight. Like, I don't think there's any fight on the remaining calendar outside of like the heavyweights. If we do get that crazy card, like that's going to like captivate the boxing world and the sports world. But the closest one is Spence and Crawford. And saw Spence. I took a selfie with him, and the dude is in shape. He's clearly getting ready for a fight. I think Spence Crawford, which from all indications that is going to happen sometime this summer, from everything Espinosa is saying, that's the next big one. I think that's the one that can get people excited. Even if it's a few years late, they're still at the top of their game. They're still 1-2 in pound-for-pound list, 1-2 definitely in the welterweight division. I think that's the next big one that we're going to be at. I think that's the next big one that fans can get excited about. It's not going to have the same crossover effect that Ryan and Gervonta did, because I think that was just a perfect storm. But it's still the next biggest one that I'm excited for.
Yeah, and that one's going to pull in casuals. It's so Tank and Ryan, they pulled in hardcore boxing fans because we love Tank. Everyone loves Tank, who's a real boxing fan. You know, Ryan posed a danger. We wanted to see that. It pulled in the casuals because you can't not hear about these two guys and them each other fighting. And then it pulled in like TikTokers and kids who want to see Ryan. So that was a little different fight with Spence and Crawford. You're looking at hardcore boxing fans, obviously, but then you're also like the casuals, because everyone talks about every barbershop conversation has Crawford and Spence in it. So there's going to be a massive draw for that fight as well. Not quite like this one because of the outside of the boxing world eyes that got brought in, but marketed the right way, that fight's going to do big numbers too.
You know why it's going to be a little bit different than Ryan and Tank? The traditionalists will say that this is a better fight, and I agree with them. This is 1-2.
Oh, yeah.
This is for all the belts at welterweight. This is the most prestigious division in boxing outside of heavyweight. Like, the one thing I guess that was missing from Tank Ryan is, like, no one really believed that Garcia was on the same level as a Tank. Like, obviously, Tank's elite. Spence Crawford, you're talking about two elites. You're talking about the two best of this generation. We're going to figure out who is the best welterweight in the world. So it has that going for it, where it might not have the crossover appeal for, you know, some kids here in the office, but damn, we're going to figure out who's the best welterweight of the last 10 years. I'm getting myself worked into a lather. Are we going to get this fight? Damn it. Are we going to get it? I want that big fight feel again. I want to go back to Vegas without Jiri in his tight pants.
We were talking about the powerful drug that is boxing. You should have seen our guy Dan this weekend. He was like a kid in a candy shop. I mean, he was buzzing all weekend long. How are you feeling? How are you
dude,
back
I'm
together
sick.
Yet? Because you must have been shot.
I'm a sicko, bro. I love
really
boxing.
Are.
I really love boxing to like a crazy degree. I think it's because I've been around it my whole life and I've been going to big fights. It's like my world. It really is. It's kind of sad because it gives and it takes away and it disappoints you a lot. But this one I've been looking forward to for so long, and to be able to be sent there by John Boy Media and to make great content with you and make great content for the fans. Like, you're right. I was literally like levitating at certain points of the weekend. I'm glad you were able to see that.
Oh yeah, absolutely. I know. I enjoy it. I know I've talked to a lot of fans too, and they agree with me, with my assessment of you, like you're so in love with this sport. And unlike fighters, you're not bitter. you don't have,
not
you don't
yet.
have, you don't have the scars that we have. Like we, like every fighter you talk to, I don't care how prolific your career was, we all have deep seated scars from the sport because it's a nasty mistress. It's boxing is the nastiest woman I've ever dated. And
and Chris Algieri's dated a lot of women.
Definitely the meanest. Definitely the nastiest. You don't have that bitterness, and it's cool to see.
You know why? Quickly.
It's innocent.
No one wants to hear about this. You know, I grew up, my dad created CompuBox, so we never had to really deal with the nastiness of the sport. You know, we kind of came in, we counted the punches.
Yeah, you're not on anyone's side.
We counted, yeah, we're very neutral. We worked with every network. We came in, we counted the punches, we gave our stats, we talked to everybody. My dad's a friendly person by nature. He's a good guy. And he's kind of rubbed off on me. And we never had to deal with the bickering. We never had to deal with the nonsense back and forth. We kind of just sniped out, and had like a love for the sport. And I hope that remains, because the media world is rough, man.
Yeah. The media world is certainly rough. You gotta be ducking and diving and slipping and sliding. You know, so this is a little bit new for you. So
yeah, I hope it doesn't break me down. But back to Gervonta, obviously face of boxing for sure. I want to see what's next for him. You know, I put out some clips from our last show we did afterwards, and I was talking about how I want to see him sell in 135. I want to see him fight for belts. And I'm looking at the comments, and it's like, well, Tank don't need to fight for belts. Belts don't matter. Haven't we learned this? He'll fight Joe Schmo and make $10 million. I was like, okay, yeah, it's true.
Belts matter, guys.
Okay, belts yeah, they do to an extent. Like, I'm happy that this past fight, didn't, like, it showed that there is power with the fighters, and we can take away some of the power of the sanctioning bodies, like WBC and all them, like, on the stage and whatnot. It just shows that, like, a big fight can be made without belts, yes, but not every big fight can be made without a belt. Like, don't we want to see Tank fight Haney? Don't we want to see Tank fight Lomachenko should he win? Like, the biggest fights for Tank, in my opinion, are guys that happen to hold belts, too. So if he can still make the most money, which is most important, and also get all four belts or a piece of the 135 picture if Haney vacates, like, yeah, I think he's going to want to do that. And I think he's ready now to not only keep the gravy train rolling, making so much money, but, like, collect a few belts along the way and really cement your legacy.
Well, it also matters because of the integrity of the sport. You can't have the best guy in the division and then you have four other world champions around. Like, what are we doing then? So just because you can transcend the belts and still be popular and still be the man and still make the money doesn't mean that the belts don't matter, because if he's at the top and then there's four other titleists out there, it doesn't look good for the sport. So the unifications are necessary. Beating other world champions, getting belts matter. But in terms of who he's fighting next, I mean, there's a lot of options. And
Some names?
Oh, yeah. I got four.
Here's Chris Algieri's list on who... I made my list yesterday. Here's Chris Algieri's list on who Tank should fight next.
I like Tank Loma. We spoke about that last week on some of the past shows. I think it's one of those fights that's kind of been marinating for a while. And I think in the fallout of whatever happens with Haney and Loma, I think there's a good chance that we'll see that fight. I like that one. I like seeing the young guy who's really stepping into his own and becoming who he really is, fighting the older guy. It's that classic young lion, old lion matchup, that crossover.
Okay, but let me ask you real quick. Regardless of if Loma wins or loses.
I believe that fight will happen.
Yeah. Okay, Loma loses a close decision and Haney vacates. I can see Loma fighting
Makes
Tank.
Total sense.
If Makes Loma gets sense. Washed, like a Kambosos-level loss, like 11-1, 10-2, does that affect... Mm-hmm. His stock? I think it does a little.
It definitely does. The fight then may not happen immediately, unless they're trying to cash out Loma, because that could be it too. It's like, well, they could just blame it on the age, and he's long in the tooth. He's in the twilight. Let's get one more big one, and that would be the next biggest fight for him, I believe, in terms of the pay. But yeah, you never know what happens at negotiating tables.
So Loma, okay, keep going.
And of course Haney.
Of course.
The chances of Haney staying at 35, I don't know.
Well, here's the thing. If Haney might stick around, if Haney decides, my best, biggest money fight, I can keep this gravy train rolling, I can make the biggest fights before I turn 25, like we saw in the 80s with Sugar Ray Leonard. Like, Haney Tank for all the belts. Yeah. If Haney beats Lomachenko and it goes right to Tank, which would be insane. Don't think he will, But imagine that. Like, that is like succession perfectly of how the sport should go.
And he can beat him. Haney is tricky enough. He's long enough. He's big enough. He's disciplined enough. That's the biggest thing about Devin Haney. That is what has separated him from all the other guys. I don't think physically he's the most talented of all of that group. In fact, he might even be the least talented physically in terms of what his natural gifts are. But his mental strength and discipline has separated him from those other guys. And we saw that with Ryan and Tank this weekend. You need to fight a perfect disciplined fight in order to beat Tank. He's way too dangerous. He's way too accurate. He's way too precise. He's way too good. You have to fight a perfect game plan. And Haney, with his height and reach and length and speed and jab, you know, that there's a blueprint there that I could see how he could be victorious. I'm okay, not saying he would beat him. I would have to analyze it for nights on end. But yeah, that's I could see it.
One last thing here. Well, for Haney, if Haney does stick around 135 and does fight Tank in this perfect world, Tank has shown that he will put rehydration clauses in fights.
Haney won't do that.
Haney said he will not do that. Haney is just as big as Ryan.
He needs to, yeah. He won't need to.
But interesting because Tank is clearly the A side. He's got the negotiating power, but Haney has all the belts. That is an interesting negotiation because who's going to win that negotiation? Like, Tank will maybe ask for the rehydration clause. Maybe he won't. I'm just assuming. That's an interesting aspect of that whole fight. Should Haney decide I'm going to stay at 135 and get my big fight with Tank?
Next fight I want to see. A little bit out of left field. Rematch with Cruz.
I left that one off mine.
So we got a healthy Tank who is coming into his own. Isaac Cruz makes for fun fights. He throws lots of punches. He's probably going to come out to an early lead because Tank is a slow starter. But what does he do with two healthy hands now? kind of puts that pass fight to rest if it goes the way that, you know, most people would think it would. Or, you know, we really see that Isaac Cruz is the goods and his style doesn't match up well for Tank.
I like it. I honestly think this has a very likelihood of happening because he's with the PBC. It's an in-house fight. It's a rematch. You have narratives built in. I would not be shocked to see Isaac Cruz. And it seems like he's turning down fights with Shakur. He's turning down fights with Cambosos. Turning down a lot of fights, Cruz, because I think he's waiting for that. It's not Tank, it's now Canelo. He's literally waiting around like we see guys do with Canelo, like for Tank.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we spoke about him on the podcast before. It's kind of interesting what the route that his team is taking, but what are you going to do? And then Tank Shakur. You know, I'm very bullish on Shakur Stevenson as being, I think, the tip-top guy. I don't know if I don't want to. I don't necessarily want to see it right away because I think Shakur needs a little bit more seasoning. But his style, man, I think he can beat anybody. But if there's a time for Tank to kind of take advantage of the younger guy, doing a la Trinidad David Reed or Trinidad, you know, Fernando Vargas or
a la Mayweather Floyd Canelo. Yeah.
Yeah, Floyd Canelo, this could be a good time for Tank to try and get that fight, try and get at him early. Not so sure that that's a very plausible matchup, but I like it. That's the thing. I like Tank against everybody. I like all of the matchups that are possible. All the top guys I can see Tank in there with. I can see Tank beating everyone too. But they're very competitive fights, and I like that.
I left Cruz off of my top five for Tank because we saw it, but I do think it might happen. I had William Zepeda on mine. The guy that's fighting this weekend.
Fun fight.
Who set the lightweight record for punches thrown in a fight, 1,536. Like, will he throw that many against Gervonta? Probably not, but would I like to see it? Yeah.
Actually, he probably will, and he'll come out to a 5-0 lead and then get knocked out.
Getting starched the second half of the fight. Frank Martin,
again, another guy needs more seasoning. I really like Frank. I was really impressed with him when he beat the kid who looked like Ali.
Michelle Rivera.
Yeah, I was very impressed with him. And remember, we were talking about that fight, and I actually picked Martin. I had a feeling Martin was just a little more physical, a little sharper, a little more disciplined, and he showed that night he fought a brilliant fight. So, yeah, I mean, good fight, but it's like, I don't know, I would like to see him develop a little more, get some big fights.
He is older, experience,
though. Because it's not just about your skill set, as we saw from Ryan. He wasn't ready for the show.
Yeah. Well, you know, Frank Martin is 28.
Away from a guy's performance.
Frank Martin's 28 years old. Not that that matters because it's your age and your development could be two different things.
Yeah.
He's with PBC. If he's offered the fight next, he's going to take it.
Of course. 100%. He's a hungry guy. Absolutely, of course.
Yeah, so that's something I would put that in the same boat as Isak Cruz, because it's a PBC fight, and they're so much easier to make. But going back to Stevenson, yeah,
Stevenson, it's not the best fight on the list, but it's very
intriguing. I mean, it's not the worst. Like, I kind of rather see Frank Martin over Cruz.
Because it's new.
Yep. Speaking of Shakur, he was interviewed somewhere today and said, "I love that fight with Gervonta. I think that's the biggest and best fight in boxing. I'm ready right now." But he's the A side. He can pick and choose. He's at the Floyd Mayweather point. He's got that level, that leverage now. So it's all up to him. I love that statement. I love Shakur Stevenson. In and out of the ring, yeah. I think he's just the best.
We are very pro Shakur on this podcast.
Yeah,
he is. I think his development has been perfect. I think his skill set, the what he brings to the table, answers like that shows that he's wise beyond his years. And yeah, man, I mean, he's very true to himself, and he's very true to what he is. So
yeah.
I can appreciate that.
The reason I think Stevenson Tank is the fight we're going to build towards, and I do agree. Like the seasoning, Like, fans may mistake that for more marinating and things we've been annoyed with as fans, but he's got one fight at 135 under his belt. Like, he's just now growing into his body and also growing into his stardom. Like, he had 10,000, I think, at Prudential, which is a really good number in New Jersey. Like, Top Rank's not going to put him in there with Tank next, and Tank is not going to want to get in there with Shakur next. Like, no. We're going to build towards this fight, and also another reason is because Shakur's going to stick at 135 for a few more years. Like, Tank is a small guy. He's like a 130-pounder in a 135-pound like body, if that even makes sense. But, like, Tank, I'm only looking at Tank against lightweights for the next two years. And Stevenson is going to stay around at lightweight. Haney is not long for 135. So, like,
no.
By process of elimination, like, and also I think it's just going to be a great fight between, you know, Tank lands the most power shots of any fighter today, and Stevenson gets hit with the least amount of power shots of any fighter today. Like, right there, that's, like, power versus defense. Like, boom, give me that fight. Like, if everything was perfect in the world.
Yeah, but that's also one of those fights that can be a dud. When you get a great defender against someone who is, he's very precise, but he's not busy. We could see a lot of posturing and looking at each other.
But the difference with Tank is, like, a lot of his fights are duds until he erases them.
Until he blasts you out. Yeah.
Right. And that's what's shared all over the place. And that's what makes fans happy at the end of the day. If they order the pay-per-view, if they, dished out money to be there. Like, that's what we were saying in the last show. Like, the difference between him and Floyd. And I'm talking money Mayweather Floyd, not Pretty Boy Floyd. Pretty Boy Floyd was knocking everybody out. But once he got hand issues, once he started, up in the competition, fighting De La Hoya.
Moving up in weight, too.
Right, moving up in weight, fighting De La Hoya, fighting the run he went on.
Castillo was the first real trouble that he had.
Yeah. But
Carlos Hernandez gave him trouble because of the hands. That's when the hands really started to be a problem.
Yeah. That was pretty much what I was meant by that statement. It was like, the difference between Tank and Floyd is that Tank will give you knockouts, and he might not be as much buyer's remorse from casual fans when it comes to pay-per-views, because the fight
he's
might
create a highlight.
Yeah, right. The fight might not be great for the first five rounds, but you're leaving saying, "Holy shit, did you see that Tank Davis knockout? Did you see?"
And you're going to see it across social media. Yep. Like, you're going to see
TikTok.
The shot. Yeah.
We're TikTok guys now. All right, we're ending the show with this. I cannot believe this. I just got a text. I actually heard about this for a while now. I knew it was in motion, but now that it's actually being reported, you're going to laugh so hard when you hear this, Chris. Floyd Mayweather will fight John Gotti III in an exhibition match.
Come on.
I heard about this months ago because my brother Nick runs a MMA promotion on Long Island. John, I've called.
Wait, this is John Gotti from Long Island?
Yes.
Yeah,
I have called John.
Oh, boy.
I called 10 of John Gotti's amateur MMA fights. I interviewed him for TMZ with his dad. Like, spent time with him and his dad. I heard rumblings of this fight last year.
He was sparring Collazo for his last fight last weekend when I called.
He did fight one. He has a couple boxing fights under his belt. Like, he fought like Star Boxing or something.
I think he has two.
Or CES or something. Star Boxing here on Long Island, East Coast. He's fighting Floyd Mayweather in an exhibition. Why? How? Like the the buildup is like
names. They must be something to do with the name. I guess people think that that's
this sport, man, is out of control.
No, that's one way to make some money. A couple tens
John
of thousands Gotti, of dollars for your third fight.
The grandson of the notorious mobster to fight Floyd Mayweather in an exhibition. You know,
hey man, use what you got. You got a name, use it.
Good for him. Make some dough. He's a great kid.
That's
good
what
kid.
I said. That's the fastest way to make big money in your third fight.
He's a good kid. He's not like the Gottis that you saw in that show, like growing up Gotti.
No, he's a great kid.
Those are his cousins. This guy is so quiet. Like,
yep.
Very respectful.
He's been in the gym for a decade.
Yeah, he's a great MMA fighter. He's going to get a cash a check now from Floyd, which is great for him. That's nuts. I was actually about to put together a short for our social media about the night that George Foreman fought five guys in one night. Do you remember that?
I don't remember that, but I know about it, but I never saw anything about it.
I was reading up on the details of it. Like, it was the fight.
Remember Digstown? That movie Digstown?
No.
With, oh man, you know Digstown?
I gotta watch that. Ooh, put it on the list.
It's one of the worst, best boxing movies out there.
I gotta put that on the list. Not to go off on a tangent here. After the Ali fight, Foreman, his handler said, you should fight five guys in one night for a spectacle and to also like rebuild your confidence. And it backfired so bad. He knocked out one guy. There were fights in the crowd. He fought someone in the ring. He ended up not knocking out the last two guys. Ali was there ringside, like mocking him. I'm going to do a little 1 minute short on it because it was so funny.
Oh,
and
nice.
It's like people think like just now we're getting all these exhibitions, right?
No, this
it's been going
is
on forever.
Ali
versus Aoki, the professional wrestler, was kicking the shit out of Ali's
legs, putting him in figure fours. Yeah,
like. This ain't new.
Butterbean was a spectacle.
But his fights were like real though.
He had 40 fights and he was four. They were four rounders.
Right. Everyone like I'm glad we're out of that phase. Though. I hated the Mayweather, the Paul Logan Paul Mayweather. That was like 2020, like when the sport was still like kind of in COVID and we couldn't make the biggest fights. Like we had saw a lot of those exhibitions and all my friends didn't understand it or were hitting me up or were like, what's going on with boxing? Like, dude, this has been going on forever. Like, literally going on since the 70s. Like, it's a spectacle. It's a circus.
Bob Arum used to always say that when you're talking about the YouTubers. He's like, nah, he's like, this is nothing new. We've been doing this for 50 years.
All right. That's our show. I think we're putting a bow on Ryan Garcia, Tank Davis. Glad everyone enjoyed it. Excited to see what's next for each guy. Excited to see Haney Lomachenko. I think that's the next big one that's on the schedule. That we can really focus on. You'll be out there in Vegas for that one again. You're going back to Vegas, bro. That's crazy.
Yeah, it's not my favorite place, but I end up there a lot every year.
It's work, though.
It's always work. I will never book a trip to Vegas for fun.
No, I never do either. It's either like wedding, bachelor party, or boxing. I've never been like, oh, I'm going to go to Vegas and drink for 3 days and gamble and breathe in that oxygen they pump into the...
Well, I go hiking when I go there a lot. So there is that, and the spas and the hotels are amazing. So there's other things to do in Vegas besides the strip.
Were you an Entourage fan?
No, not really.
There was a Vegas episode, and Johnny Drama's guy character, he was like, there are many different
characters. Yeah.
There are many different Vegases, you know, like spa Vegas. There's party Vegas. There's all different. Algeria will be.
I used to live there, man. So I know like neighborhood Vegas. Like I know non-strip neighborhood Vegas.
Yeah, my buddies live out in Henderson, and they're doing great stuff. Yeah. Real estate. Last thing.
Where you're playing slots at the bar.
Yeah, exactly. According to Adam Stern, I don't know who this guy is, but he is reporting. Oh, he's a fight reporter for SBJ, which is Sports Business Journal. 1.2 million pay-per-view buys for Tank.
Whoa,
$22 million gate, which is the fifth biggest gate in Nevada fighting history. And the lights have just went off in here, which means we should wrap up. But I said this fight would do over $1 million with Ryan Garcia in one of my interviews, and I was laughing.
You did, and then you reneged and you said over $500,000.
I know, I went back. But I said this fight could do over $1 million with Ryan Garcia after his last fight in L.A., laughed at. Who's laughing now? I don't know. I don't get any of this money from them, but
no. good place to end it. Boxing is on a high note.
Yes, we love it. As always, folks, protect yourselves at all times. Stay out of those DMs. They're turning the lights off in the studio. We're out.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm-fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.